See, we're beginning here at the top of Chaf Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is about to bring a sugya that has nothing to do with our Gemara, but because, similar to in Brachot, the Bala Memra, person who says over this piece of Agadata, is the same person that said over the previous statement. So the previous statement related to our Gemara, which was the maximum height of Ner Shel Chanukah. And now we have another statement, which was Amar Rav Kahana, Dorosh Natan Bar Yume, Shmeid Rav Tanhum, Mai Dichtiv, when the Torah says by Yosef, when the brothers throw him into the pit, Vaborik Ein Bo Mayim, the pit is empty, there is no water in it, Mashmash Nemar Boreik, if you tell me that the pit is empty, of course there's no water, and if it's empty, there's no water. So then why does the Torah take that extra step of saying to us there was no water? Even though there was no water in it, the diok is, there were other things that were there, including snakes and scorpions. So there are many drashot trying to connect this to the sugya issues of Chanukah. But the truth is that the only reason it's brought here is because it's said over by Rav Kahana in the name of Rav Natan Bar Yume Mishmeid Rav Tanchum. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbo, Ner Chanukah mitzvah lanicha betefach hasmucha lepetach. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah again is to place it within a tefach of the doorway. Again, like yesterday, there's a machloker between Rashi and Tosafot. According to Tosafot, tefach within the doorway is whichever doorway is out to the Rishut HaRabim. So if it's your house that's on the Rishut HaRabim, then you put it outside the door of your house. If it's your chatzer, your courtyard, that has a door into the Rishut HaRabim, then you place it outside the doorway to the courtyard. On the other hand, Rashi thinks that it's a tefach inside of your door, the door of your house, period. Not having anything to do with Rishut HaRabim. If your door of your house opens up into the chatzer, then you put it outside your door in the chatzer. If your door of your house opens into the Rishut HaRabim, you put it outside the door into the Rishut HaRabim. So Rashi is very focused on the house, the door of the house. As Tosafot is focused on the Rishut HaRabim, the access out to the Rishut HaRabim. And that's their machloket. This is the second time we've seen it, and there'll be another time, a third time, where Rashi and Tosafot seem to disagree about this point. Eichan menachle, where do you place it in the doorway? Of course, you always place it on the right side. Whenever we have an option between right and left, we put it on the right side. Shmo midifti amar mismo. He says that you put it on the left side. Hilchuto locha is mismo. Put it on the left side. Kedei shetei nerchan uka mismo. So that the nerot will be on the left side. Umezuzah miyamin. And that the mezuzah will be on the right side. As we know from the drasha, amezuzot beitecha uvisharecha, they darshan from the word beitecha, biatcha, the way that you enter, and normally you put your right foot in front of your left foot. So therefore, the mezuzah goes on the right side of the door. So if you're entering in the house, the mezuzah will be on the right side, and therefore we put the chanukiah on the left side. I would just suggest in short here, there's a lot more to say about it, it seems that Chazal were mitakein here, the placement of the Chanukiah, similar to the way it was structured in the Mikdash. If you think about the Mishkan, in the Mishkan you have, as you enter into the Kodesh, obviously the Mizbeach is in front of you, to your right is the Shulchan, to your left is the Menorah, and straight ahead of you is the Parochet, the doorway into the Kodesh HaKodashim. And the Kohen Gadol does the avod of lighting the menorah. That's what it seems like from the Torah. Pashtut, the pasuk is that Aaron is the one who lights the menorah. According to many mefarshim, even a regular Kohen can light it. But everybody agrees that on the first time in Chanukat, HaMenorah, that the Kohen Gadol did it. Now, if I take that setup and come to one's house, then what Chazal structured here was something very similar. If we think of the doorway to one's house, Petach HaBayit, as being equivalent of the Petach or the Parochet leading into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, inside the house is the Kodesh HaKodeshim, similar to what is in the Mishkan. That means that leading into the house, you're going to have the objects that would be found in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, when you entered in to the Kodesh HaKodeshim through the Kodesh, on your left side is the Norah. Here, the Chanukiah will be on your left side. Your right side is the Shulchan. Over here, you're going to have the Mezuzah. Again, it's not the form to explain it, but the Mezuzah has certain representations of seeing Hashem within the mundane, seeing Hashem in the status quo. Look in the Rambam at the end of Hilchot Mezuzah, where it describes what the purpose of the Mezuzah is, very similar to the purpose of the Shulchan. In addition to that, focus in the Gemara always is on the Balabayit, who lights the Chanukiah. The Balabayit is similar in this framework to the Kohen Gadol. And that's why there's emphasis on the Balabayit doing the lighting. And because of that, you have what I see a sense is a setup that's very similar to the Mishkan. And the implications are obviously also very important and uplifting, which is that the view is that one's house, the internal side of one's house, is like the Kodesh HaKodeshim in the Mikdash. And therefore, the Chanukiah is placed outside, just like the Menorah is placed outside. And the Gemara we'll see in the second half of today's daf says, V'chi l'ora hu tzarich. The Menorah wasn't there for light, because Hashem doesn't need that light. And similar here, the Chanukiah is placed in a location where it has no bearing in terms of light. You light the Chanukiah outside, you don't need the light outside. This is at night. Nobody was outside at that time. It was clear that it was done for Pesume Nisa, because nobody put lights out then. You have a Chanukiah that's below 10 tefachim. It's down very low on the ground. It's not in a location where it's providing light. It's specifically there to indicate the Pesume Nisa, to indicate the presence of Hashem in this house. And that's the same thing in the Mishkan. The Menorah is there to indicate that the presence of Hashem is there by the Aron. Anyway, I think there's a nice parallel between the way that we structure or set up the Chanukiah as to that which happened in the Mishkan, which we've already seen, and we're going to see again in today's daf, the parallels between the Chanukiah and the Menorah. Right, next sugi, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Asi. Now, there could be a girsa of Amar Rav. Also, would be interesting because that brings it much further back, this statement, which is Asur Daratzot Ma'ot Kenegan Ner Chanukah. One may not count money using the Nerot Chanukah. That brings us back to the beginning of the sugya about whether one is allowed to hishtameju be'ora. Again, over there, we brought Rav Huna, Rav Chista, at the beginning of the sugya, and after that, we mentioned Rav. Rav says that it's asur lihishtamesh le'ora. Over here, you have another statement from Rav, if it is, quote, in the name of Rav, that would suggest similarly. Ki amrita gamed Shmuel. It was said over in front of Shmuel, amrali, ki ner kudusha yeshba. What type of kudusha is in the Neirot Chanukah? So, Matalev Yosef, v'chi dam kedusha yeshbo. When it comes to blood, is there kedusha in blood? But the Tanya of a brayta shafach v'chisa, but mesh shafach yichaseh, shelo yichasenu beregel. That when you cover over the blood, this is kitsui adam that has to be done for chayot and ofot that are shechted. The blood that comes out, you have to cover the blood. You have to do kitsui adam. So that kitsui adam, once you cut the neck, you've done the shechita. You have to cover it over. The Gemara Darshan, the Braita, is brought here that Bamesh Shafach Yichaseh. Whatever you use to spill the blood, that's what you should use to cover it, whether it's your hand, the knife. But Shalo Yichasenu Beregel, but you're not allowed to kick the dirt over the blood. Shalo Yehu Mitzvot B'Ziyot Olav. You shouldn't denigrate the mitzvot. You shouldn't use your foot, which is not the appropriate way to come or approach a mitzvah. So Hachanami Shalo Yehu Mitzvot B'Ziyot Olav. So the same thing over here. Don't use the or of the Neirot Chanukah so that they shouldn't be bezuyua love, that you're using a mitzvah for something that's mundane. And that would be considered to be inappropriate in this sense. So it's not about whether there's kedusha in the Neirot or not having kedusha in the Neirot. It's about the way that you approach mitzvot and the way that you interact with the mitzvot. So now the Gemara is going to continue. Ba'minei Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, ma'ul istapek min yoyei sukkah kol shiva. So one allowed to utilize the decorations in the Sukkah during the 7 days of Sukkot. Amalei Amru, Sur, Lartzot Ma'ot, Keneged Ner Chanukah. We already said you're not allowed to count money by the light of the Nerot Chanukah. Amrav Yosef, Mareid Avram, Master of Avram. And that's a Lashon of Tmiyah, being unbelievable. I can't believe what you just said. Tali Tanya, but Delo Tanya. You are trying to bring a proof to something about Sukkah, which has a brayta that explicitly says what the din is, b'dilo tanyo, and you bring a proof from Chanukah, Nerot Chanukah, which is a member of Rav Yehuda. The tanyo, sachacha kehilchata, if he covered over the sukkah properly, he put on the schach, v'ichra, and then he decorates it, bikramim ubesadinim hamitzuyarim, with colored sheets and decorative sheets, the talabai guzim, and then he hung from there, from the roof, he hung nuts, or walnuts, afarsakim, peaches, shkedim,
almonds,
trimonim, pomegranates, parchilei anavim, and
clusters
of the grapevine, tarot shel shibolim, and the heads of the grains, yenot, shmanim, besiltot, hung wine, oil, and flour, Asur lehistapek mehen ad motzei yom tov acharon shel chag. One may not take benefit from them until after the completion of the entire Sukkot, including Shmini Atzeret. Vim hitna alehem, if when you put them up at first, you conditionally put them up, hakol defitna'o, then it goes according to your condition, whatever conditions that you set out. Elam Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef said, avon dekulu dam. Paradigm for all of these issues is from dam. That's midoraita, that's the pasuk in the Torah. From that pasuk we see that one may not be mevazeta mitzvot. So from dam is the avtipus, the paradigm for all the others. And therefore we learn Nerut Hanukkah and Noe Sukkah from dam, that one may not treat any mitzvah in an inappropriate manner. You have to have a certain amount of respect and consideration for the mitzvah. So Rashi explains what is the t'nai that one has to make. The condition one has to say is any bodel mehen, ko ben ashmashot shel kiddush yom tov rishon. That for the ben ashmashot going into yom tov rishon, he says you do not release them from your possession. You do not allow them to be designated for the mitzvah only. And in that way, you prevent them from becoming what's called muksa the mitzvah. To be designated for the mitzvah where you cannot use them at all. Tosafot notes that the Gemara actually brings two reasons why one may not engage with Noe Sukkah. And you see that partly from what Rashi is discussing here. One is that it's a bizui mitzvah for you to use the decorations of the Sukkah. The second thing is that it is also muksa the mitzvah. Tosafot asks, why do I need both of them? Well, I need two reasons why you cannot engage the Noye Sukkah. That's what it says. Well, it makes a difference. Mashma, that he says, Dvishum did katze the mitzvata, lo avi asrinad bim cholushu moleid. Being muksa the mitzvah is only relevant on Yom Tov itself. That's not relevant on Chol HaMoed. On Chol HaMoed, there's no din of muksa. Muksa is a din in Yom Tov. Then, bizui mitzvah, we wouldn't have said anything if they fell. Bizui mitzvah only applies when you take the decorations off the Sukkah and then use them. But if one of the decorations fell off, he picked it up from the ground and used it, that's not a bizui mitzvah, it's no longer doing the mitzvah. Over there, muksa, the mitzvata, will be relevant, because even when it falls, it still has a din of muksa. On Yom Tov, for sure, you cannot pick it up. Then on Chol HaMoed, you would be able to pick it up. Again, he says that you need both reasons in order to interact with each other, to get you the isurim that apply both to Chol HaMoed, as well as to items that fall off and are on the ground on Sukkot. The other thing that's very interesting is that the Gemara here says that you may not use the decorations until Motzei Yom Tov Acharon. The reason for that, and here the Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, is applying it even in Chutz Laaretz, not just in Eretz Yisrael, but also in Chutz Laaretz. And that's because coming into Shmini Atzeret, on your way into Shmini Atzeret, if you ate on the seventh day of Sukkot, Hoshana Rabbah, if you ate anything on that day, you, even up to the last minute, you would have to go into the Sukkah. You're obligated to be in the Sukkah. Shmini Atzeret, in Eretz Yisrael, you're not chayav to eat in the Sukkah. So let's do it in Eretz Yisrael. Ben Ashmashot, in the period between the seventh day and Shmini Atzeret, in that Ben Ashmashot, you have a safek, whether it's the seventh day, or a safek, whether it's the eighth day. Technically, if you needed to eat during that period of time, which you can't, but if you ate to that during that time, you'd have to enter into the Sukkah because of that safek. That means that the Sukkah is still relevant. Ben Ashmashot, going into the eighth day, anything that's relevant, Ben Ashmashot, once it's Muksa Ben Ashmashot, it's Muksa the Kula Yom Kulo. So therefore, even though the Sukkah is not relevant on Shmini Atzeret, despite that fact, it's still Muksa for the entire Shmini Atzeret, and one may not take the items from there or do anything with the Sukkah until Motzei Shmini Atzeret. In Chutz Laaretz, that has even more implications, which is that on the eighth day in Chutz Laaretz, you sit in the Sukkah. Yatvei Matvinan, you sit in the Sukkah, Bruche Lom Bevarchinan, you don't make a bracha misafek. Because the eighth day for them is a safek, it's the seventh day. Safek, it's the eighth day. That means between the eighth and ninth day, Ben Ashmashot, you're in that same position, where if you wanted to eat during that period of time, you would have to sit in the Sukkah because of the safek of Shmini Atzeret. So that means that going into the ninth day, going to Simcha Torah in the Chutz Laaretz, the Sukkah is still Muksa at Ben Ashmashot. Muksa Ben Ashmashot means the entire ninth day as well, Sukkah is off limits. As opposed to Lulav and Etrog. Lulav and Etrog, both here and in Chutz Laaretz, we stop taking Lulav and Etrog on the seventh day. On the eighth day, on Shmini Atzeret, in Chutz Laaretz, they don't take Lulav and Etrog misafeg. So that means the mitzvah of Lulav and Etrog ends on the seventh day. Ben Ashmashot, going in from the seventh day into the eighth day, mitzvah of Lulav and Etrog is still relevant, because it's the seventh day also. That means that for the eighth day, for Shmini Atzeret, Lulav and Etrog are muksa, because they were muksa coming in, saw the mitzvata coming in to Shmini Atzeret. That means in Eretz Yisrael, when Shmini Atzeret is over, you can use them. But that also means in Chutz Laretz, when Shmini Atzeret is over, you can also use them. Because on the eighth day in Chutz Laretz, Lulav and Etrog are not relevant. They're only Muksa because of the Benesh Mashot coming in. We're not going to say, oh, because they're Muksa because of the Benesh Mashot. The next Benesh Mashot is also affected. It's not like that. So on the ninth day in Chutz Laretz, in Simchat Torah, then Lulav and Etrog would not be Muksa. So that's a distinction that Tosafot points out between Lulav and Etrog and Sukkah, as to when the Muksa L'mitzvot ends. Lulav and Etrog ends at the end of the eighth day. Again, in Eretz Yisrael, there's no Nafgamina. The Sukkah only ends after the ninth day, after Simchat Torah and Chutz Laretz, and so there is a Nafgamina between the two. So it's interesting, Shiloh, that you have family from Chutz Laretz that came in, and they need to eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, but you can't eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. For you, it's Bal Tosif. For them, it's part of the mitzvah that came in from Chutz Laretz. So what do you do if you're hosting family from Chutz Laretz, and they need to eat in Sukkah on Atzeret? What you can do is, you can pasul half the Sukkah, you can take away the Schach on half the Sukkah, and you sit on the side that is Pasul, and they sit on the side that is Kasher, and you can be in the Sukkah together. Itmar. Rav Amar, Ein Badikim, Miner the Ner. You cannot light from candle to candle of the Nerot Chanukah. Shmuel Amar, Madikin. One is allowed to light from candle to candle. Rav Amar, Ein Matim, Tzitzit, Mi Beged the Beged. Rav says you're not allowed to take Tzitzit from clothing to clothing. Shmuel Amar, Matirim, Mi Beged the Beged. Rav Amar, Ein Alocha, Rabbi Shimon, the Greira. The Alocha is not like Rabbi Shimon in Greira, which is Dover She'inu Mitkavein. In Hilchot Shabbat, if you do Dover Sheinu with Kavein, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's Mutar. Shmuel Amar, Alocha, Rabbi Shimon ben Greira. And Shmuel says, the Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon, that Dover Sheinu with Kavein is Mutar. What do these have to do with each other? Nothing. Why are they brought here together? Because of the next line, Amar Abaye, Komile Demar, anything that my Rabbi did, it's Rabbi Bar Nachmani, who is the Rabbi of Abaye, says, Komile Demar, Rabba Paskind, Avid Karav. Anything to do with the Surim, Halacha Karav. That's what we know. Halacha Karav be Surei, Levar Mehani Tlat. With the exception of these three items, David Kishmuel, that he passed him like Shmuel, which is Mandikim Iner the Ner, when it's permitted to light from one candle to the other. Umatirimi Beged the Beged, you can move Tzitzit from one Beged to the other. Halacha Karav Shimon ben Begreira. And Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in Greira, that Davar She'inu Mitkavein is Mutar on Shabbat. So that's why these three items are brought together, not because necessarily they have anything to do with each other, but rather because of the fact that in these three instances, we paskin like Shmuel and not like Rav. The Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gorer Adam Mita, Kisei Visafsal. Person could drag a bed, a chair, a bench, even though he's dragging it on a dirt floor. Ubevad Shaloit Kavein Lasot Charitz. As long as he doesn't intend when he's pulling them to make some sort of marking or ditch when he pulls them. These are very heavy items. When he drags them along, they're going to compress the dirt that's under him. It's going to cut into the ground. As Rashi says, it's either a toldah of choresh, toldah of boneh. So if you intend to do that and intend to have marking or depth or something that you're trying to do there, then that is a malacha. But here, you have no intent for that. You demonstrate the kavein. You drag it, and it's possible to drag it without making that mark. It happens to be that it does make that mark. You're not interested in it. Since you're not interested in it, that is considered to be something called Dover She'enu Mitkavein. Dover She'enu Mitkavein is Mutar, according to Rabbi Shimon. Yotiv, Aumi Rabbanon, Kamed Rav Adar Rava, V'yotiv Kamar. One of the Rabbanon was sitting before Rav Adar Rava, and he said, Taimod Rav, Mishum Bizui Mitzvah. The reasoning behind Rav, what you're not allowed to light from candle to candle, is because of Bizui Mitzvah. It's a denigration to the Mitzvah to use it to light the other Nerot. Says, don't listen to this one of these Rabbanan. Time the Rav, I'll tell you the reason by Rav. Looks like he is weakening the mitzvah. Because when you light from one candle to the other, the source flame is diminished at the point that you're lighting the other candle. So it looks like you're diminishing the mitzvah in some way. My benayu. What's the difference between these two opinions? The Kamadik Mishraga the Shraga. So that's exactly your question. The difference in the Nafkamina between them is if you light from candle to candle. Mandar Mishum Bizu Mitzvah. Mishraga the Shraga Madlik. One who says it's Bizu Mitzvah to light from candle to candle is not a problem because you're moving from a candle that is a mitzvah to another candle that is a mitzvah. So you're only being asuk in items that deal with the mitzvah. Each candle on the Chanukiah is part of the mitzvah. So if you take one candle that's a mitzvah and light another candle that's a mitzvah, that's not problematic. It'd only be if you passed it through a third object that would be problematic, because then you're using Dover Chol to take the fire from the Dvar Mitzvah and put it onto the next candle. So there the problem would be if you use something in the middle. But if you do it directly, no problem. Shumachushe Mitzvah, Mishrag L'Shrag Nami Asur. It looks like you're weakening the Mitzvah, that it's if you're taking away some of the light. That is true when even you go from candle to candle. It still looks like that. That's enough gemina between these two reasons. Extinguished? Right, so I think that might be included in the Machish Mitzvah, but nobody says about Kiboy, but they're still afraid of it being weakened somehow. Meitiv Rav Avyo, Sela Shel Maisu Sheni, or Maisu Sheni, depends, the Gra says that the Sela Shel should not be in there. Ein Shoklim Kenegdo Dinarei Zahav. One may not weigh against it gold coins, but Filu Lachelolav Maisir Sheni Acher. Even to use those coins for redeeming Maisir Sheni. You have dinarim, you have coins of Maisir Sheni, and then you want to see that you have the appropriate amount of coins, whether that was to redeem the coins that you have on these other coins, or whether it's for other Maisir Sheni, you want to make sure that you have the right amount. So you have these coins on one side of the scale, and you're putting on chulin coins on the other side. Your intent with the chulin coins on the other side is to make them into kedushat Maisir Sheni. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says you may not do that. You may not put these chulin coins against the Maisir Sheni coins, because it seems like it's a problem of Bizui Mitzvah. If you say that Rav and Shmuel argue about Ner the Ner, Ava Bekinsa, we're talking about when you use a intermediary object, Asar Shmuel, then Shmuel also agrees that it's Asur in that case. Ha, Lodavi Tiyufta. Then we don't have any question over here, because even Shmuel agrees that when you're using an object of Chulin, then that is problematic. If you say that Shmuel says it's mutar, even in the case where you have a third object in the middle, this Mishnah will be a problem for Shmuel. So over here you see, when you engage in chulin, it is problematic, even though your intent is to eventually use it for a mitzvah. So just like by the Maaser Sheni, when you have mitzvah on one side, chulin on the other side, and the Tosefta tells us that you may not do this, even though you intend to make the chulin coins into a mitzvah, so too by Nerot Chanukah, even if though you put it onto a third object which you intend to light the other candle with, should be problematic because you're passing through chulin. So that'd be a problem for Shmuel's opinion. So Amar Abba, Gzeira Shemelo Yikavein Mishkelotav. Problem is that maybe he will not get it exact, become Afik Lulu Chulin, and then they end up making them into chulin. The way Rashi explains it, is that he'll be weighing these coins here, and then he'll see a good coin. In the coins in their day, the inherent value of the coin was the value of the coin. So the weight of silver, the weight of gold was what gave the coin the value. Over time, when you used coins, they wore down, they got chipped, they got knocked down. So people generally accepted them, even though they were missing. Up to a certain point, they would accept the coins, even though they were not exact weight. But if you got a coin that was perfect, versus a coin that's slightly chipped, if you had to opt for which one you'd use for Maaser Sheni, you'd most likely use the chipped coin for Maaser Sheni, and put in your pocket the coin that is of good shape, because that's something that you need for interacting outside. So therefore, Rashi says, what are you going to do? You're going to start putting the coins on the scale, and you're going to see a really nice coin. So you're going to say, instead of leaving it there and using it for Maaser Sheni, you're going to say, no, I'm going to keep that one for myself to use later on. I mean, it's permissible. These coins are chulin, but what you end up having is, you're going to have this coin be used against the Maaser Sheni on the scale, but then not ever use it in the end for Maaser Sheni. You're going to end up pocketing the coin, keeping it as chulin. And that would be a Bizui Mitzvah, because there you never end up using it for a mitzvah in the end. So that's the chashash here. Not that you're not allowed to have something chulin against mitzvah if you intend to use it for a mitzvah. It's just that we're afraid that you may never end up using it for a mitzvah because of the possibility that you'll take one of those coins. So now the machloket here is, what does Rav hold? If Rav holds that the problem here is mishum bizui mitzvah, that means that if Rav thinks the problem is bizui mitzvah, then the only problem is to light through a third object. To light near the nair is mutar. That means if Shmuel argues on him in that case, that means that Shmuel's arguing even when it goes through a third object, that it's mutar. That's one way to read it. If Rav says that the problem here is achushe mitzvah, then Rav is saying that's even problematic near the nair. So over there, Shmuel could be just arguing about near the nair. But he would agree with Rav when he went through a third object that it would be problematic. Depending on what you think, Rav thinks the problem is, whether it's Bizui Mitzvah or Achushei Mitzvah, will also determine where you think Shmuel's position of being Matir is. If Rav thinks that Miner the Ner is Mutar, then obviously Shmuel's not arguing on him there. He's arguing on him when you do it through a Kinsa, when you do it through a third object. Whereas if Rav thinks that Miner the Ner is a Sur, that's where Shmuel could be arguing. That's what the Gemara over here is entertaining. Once we have that Tosefta from Maisa Sheni, depending on what Shmuel holds, which depends on what Rav holds, then we have to answer why this Tosefta is not problematic. So, Meiti Rav Sheshet. Michutz la parochet ha'edut, yorochu to'aron. So that you place the menorah, you set it up, you light it outside of the parochet. V'chi lo ra hu tzarich. Does God need the light of the menorah? V'alo ko arvim shena shachu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar lo halchu elo ro. In all the 40 years that B'nai Yisrael on the Midbar, they used the light of Hashem to go. The Ananei HaKavod provided light for them, the fire that was in front. They didn't need anything. Hashem provided them light. So what? He needs a menorah inside of the Mikdash? That doesn't make any sense. Ela eduti lebaye olam. It's a testimony to all that come. Sheshkina shura b'Yisrael. The Shekhinah is present in B'nai Yisrael. Ma edut. What is that testimony? Amarav, zu ner maravi. It's the western candle, which we'll explain in a second. Shenotin b'ashemek midat chavrotah. You put the same amount of oil in it. And in the end, you used a light from it. And with that, you ended. It remained lit for the duration of the entire 24 hours, which was the edut that Hashem was present, that the ner maravi, or what we call now the ner tamid, in the shul, zecher to this. But that was always lit, and that was an indication of Hashem's presence. Goes back to what I said before, that the menorah, in a sense, is this idea of persume nisa, that Hashem's present is always here, Hashem's always involved, and that same is true by the Chanukiah. The lighting of the Chanukiah is a persume nisa, that Hashem's present, that Hashem is involved in the world, and Hashem intervenes in the world, and that's why we light it outside, and the Shekhinah is present. Just like in the Mishkan, the Shekhinah is present, so too, for one's house, the Shekhinah is present in the Mikdash Ma'at in one's house. The Tosafot does ask over here, what do you mean, 40 years? He says, why is it just the 40 years? Every day we go by the light of Hashem. Is it referring to the Kohanim? Do the Kohanim need the light inside it? Because didn't the Ananei HaKavod provide them light in the Midbar, so he wouldn't have needed that light. So then he explains it according to Aaron, but then he says that if you look in the Midrashei Tanaim, it's pretty clear that it's speaking about the Shekhinah. Tosafot doesn't have any answer why it's referencing the 40 years and not always. I mean, it's true in the Mikdash as well. It's not just true in the Mishkan. It could have been that the answer that this was just focusing on the Mishkan. The Mishkan, it was relevant for those 40 years that they were in the Midbar, so that's the focus. It's not just to say that it's limited to 40 years, but Tosafot does raise that issue. The second thing is, what exactly happened in the Mikdash? There are two things we need to know. There's a machloket in Menachot, how the menorah stood. Did the menorah stand east-west? Or did the menorah stand north-south? If the menorah went north-south, the Shekhinah, the Kodesh HaKodeshim, is found in the west. If the menorah is north-south, that means it's perpendicular to the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Over there, everybody agrees that Ner Maravi was the middle Ner. When it's running north-south, that means that all the Neirot pointed towards the middle Ner, and the middle Ner, the wick pointed in towards the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and that was classified as the Ner HaMaravi. If it goes east-west, which one is considered to be the Ner HaMaravi? So naturally you would say the Ner HaMaravi is the most western lamp on the menorah. That would be the Ner HaMaravi. But that's not the way the Gemara views it. Gemara views it that the second one from the east is called the Ner HaMaravi. Obviously the most eastern one cannot be the Ner HaMaravi, because that's the eastern one on the menorah. The one next to it is classified as the Ner Maravi. As Rashi points out here, as Gemara in the Menachot, the second one in is classified as the Ner Maravi. Why? Because in relationship to the first one, it's the Ner Maravi. Rashi over here gives a reason why he thinks that's true, because Ein Mavirin al Mitzvot. You don't pass by a mitzvah. The second lamp on the menorah is Ner Maravi relative to the Ner Mizrahi, to the eastern light. And therefore, if you have a choice to do a mitzvah, that qualifies as the Ner Maravi, and therefore that's the first opportunity, the first one you're going to bump into, you're going to make that into the Ner Maravi. Even though technically all six of them to the west of the Ner Mizrahi are called Ner Maravi, nevertheless the first one that you come into contact with, that is what they made into the Ner Maravi. That's the first thing we need to know. The second thing we need to know is that the Torah talks about Atavat HaNerot, fixing up the Nerot, both by the Avodah Bashachar, and the Avoda Ben Arbayim in the afternoon. The question is, what was involved in each of these cases? And that is a machloket here between Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi believes that the menorah was only lit Ben Arbayim in the afternoon. It was lit. The Avoda that was done on the menorah in the morning was called Hatavat Neirot. It was cleaning out the Neirot and resetting them for the afternoon. But they were not lit in the morning. The Rambam, on the other hand, believes that they lit the menorah both in the morning and the afternoon. If they lit it primarily in the afternoon, but if it extinguished overnight, it wasn't ready, they relit it in the morning. They did Hatavat Neirot, and then they relit it to ensure that it was lit all the time, not just at night, but also during the day. It's a machlokus in the word tamid. What does it mean to be tamid? Tamid has two meanings. Tamid can mean always. That's the way the Rambam is viewing it. That it's near tamid means that it's always lit. But tamid can also be consistently. That's the way the word tamid is used, that you do something on a consistent basis. The tamid shel shachar, it's not brought all the time, it's just brought on a consistent basis every day. So Rashi interprets tamid here to mean consistent. So that means every day you lit the menorah. Not that the menorah was always lit. The Rambam learns tamid over here to mean consistent, always. Meaning that it was always lit, not just every day. But that also makes a difference here. Now you understand what happened in the Mikdash. When was the Ner Arvi and what they did with the Ner Maravi. So this is what Rashi explains. Lefi, Sheshar Hayam Mitiv Shacharit. He used to clean out all the other six in the morning. Vizum Mitiv Ben Arbayim. But the Ner Maravi, you only cleaned out at night. You take the old wick in your hand, or you place it down in a kli, until you put in a new oil and wick in the Ner Maravi, then you light it from the old wick, and from that one you light the others. Rashi says that the Hatavat HaNeirot was done in Shacharit. You cleaned out all the other six in Shacharit, made them ready. Came to Ben Arbayim, the Ner Tamid was still there, it was still burning. So what do? You pull out the wick with the flame on it, or the lamp with the flame on it, depending if you thought the lamp was detachable or not. Take that out, you clean out the Ner Maravi, you do whatever you need to do, and then you put a new wick into it, and you take that wick, the old wick that has the flame on it, and now you light the new wick of the Ner Maravi. From that Ner Maravi, then you spread out the fire from that. You light from that Ner Maravi the other Neirot. And then, according to Rashi, in the quote in the Gemara, when it says, "Umimena haya madlik uba haya misayim," from it he lit, and ba haya misayim is that he did the hatavat neirot. That was it. He ended the last hatavat neirot. The last cleaning of the neirot was done for the Ner Maravi. Umimena haya madlik is once you lit it again, the new Ner Maravi, you lit from that one. That's the way Rashi interprets it. He does mention that the Mishnah in Yoma seems to indicate that they did everything at Shacharit. Even the Ner Maravi was cleaned out at Shacharit. That, he says, was after the death of Shimon HaTzadik, certain things stopped happening in the Mikdash. One of the ones was that the Ner Maravi did not light all the time. When Shimon HaTzadik was alive, the Ner Tamid stayed on until the afternoon. Once he died, even the Ner Tamid, the Ner Maravi extinguished. And therefore, according to Rashi, you would have to clean out all the Neirot and relight just the Ner Maravi. You have to relight the Ner Maravi to be until Ben Arbayim, and from that you would then light the others at the afternoon time. So that's how Rashi explains it. Tosafot takes issue with that. You don't take the wick out and light from that wick, the old wick. If you could take the old wick out and light the Ner Maravi, use the old wick and light all the others. What's the whole point of lighting, taking the old wick, lighting the new Ner Maravi, and then lighting from that? It makes no sense. So Tosafot says that that's not what the statement here means. But he says, clean out. In the afternoon, he cleaned out, and it went out. It extinguished the Ner Maravi. Before he cleaned out the Ner Maravi, he lit the other candles that were already ready from that. Then, after he had done that, he cleans out the Ner Maravi and extinguishes it. And then he relights the Ner Maravi from the others that are now already lit. That's the way Tosafot reads it. And therefore, when he says, Ubahaya Misayim, well, according to the Tosafot, doesn't mean that that was the last one to be cleaned out, but whether it is that was the last one to be lit. Because the Ner Maravi was not, like according to Rashi, the Ner Maravi was the first to be lit. And then from it, you lit the others. Tosafot says, no, that you lit all the others from it. Then you cleaned out the Ner Maravi so it extinguished, and then you relit the Ner Maravi from it. So it's the last one to be lit. That's a machloket Rashi and Tosafot. What Ubahaya Misayim means, according to Rashi, Ubahaya Misayim means it was the last one to be cleaned out. According to Tosafot, it's the last one to be lit. Beyond that, you have a machloket between the Rambam and Rashi, which is whether the candles were also lit in the morning or not. Rashi says no, the Rambam says yes. Tevin de Kaviya Nerot. Losagya delo meshkil vadluke. Wait a minute. Over here, the menorah is a fixed menorah. You can't light from one lamp to the other lamp if they're fixed in place. If that's the case, the only way you can move the fire from one to the other is to use a third object. So take something, light it from the candle, the lamp, and then move it over to the next lamp. Kasha, bend on the Amar Mishum Zuya Mitzvah. Bend him on the Amar Mishum Achushe Mitzvah. This is a question according to everyone. If you think the problem is Bizuye Mitzvah, then certainly moving it through a third object is a Bizuye Mitzvah. According to one who says Achushe Mitzvah, can't light even with a Kinsa. So no matter what, you have a problem here. Because according to both opinions, you cannot use a third object, according to Rav, to light it. And therefore now you have a question. So now the Gemara says, so what are you going to do? Targumar Rav Papa b'tilot arukot. Talking about long wicks. So yeah, you're right, the lamps can't touch each other, but you can have very long wicks in the menorah. And those very long wicks, you could drag the wick over and touch the other wick, and that would cause it to light. So Mar says, sof sof, the man d'amar mishum achushe mitzvah kasho. According to Mar says, achushe mitzvah, you're not even allowed to light me near the ner. That would be problematic. In the Mikdash, they were lighting me near the ner. Kasho, enochanami. It's a problem. Mar says, my have Allah, what's the din? So again, this is where Tosaf makes his comment. What do you mean, what's the din? The Allah is like Shmuel. What do you mean, what's the din? Tosafot says, I don't understand what's going on in the Gemara. But a machlok and rabbi Shmuel, we pass them like a Shmuel. That means lick me near the nair. Tosafot says, one possibility is that the Gemara is not conclusive yet. They don't take Rabba's statement as conclusive that the halacha is like Shmuel. And in Ochanami, we're discussing it within the position of Rav. The other possibility is that, so it says that we're discussing this within the position of Shmuel. If the halacha is like Shmuel, is it mutar to use this third object or not? And that will be determined how we answer this question or how this braita can be explained. So either, again, Gemara is still entertaining the possibility that the halacha is like Rav, or like the Rivam suggests over here, this is even in the Shita of Shmuel, we want to know, the Shmuel think that there's a problem of lighting derech kinsa. Is there a problem lighting through a third object? And he only allows you to light me near the nair, or does he even allow you to go through a third object? So, Muna Breda Rabbi Yeshua, Chazina, I had Loko se mitzvah, malikim me near the nair. If a Loko is the mitzvah, then you can do it near the nair. I had Nocho se mitzvah, in malikim me near the nair. A Nocho is the mitzvah, then you may not light from candle to candle. In the Mikdash, it's clear that a Loko se mitzvah. Loko is the mitzvah in the Mikdash to light the menorah. And we already have, from there, an indication that you're allowed to light me near the nair. Therefore, if by Chanukah, the Chanukiah, is a mitzvah of a Loko, then it should be Doma the Mikdash. It should be exactly like the Mikdash. Just like in the Mikdash, Loko se mitzvah, and you're allowed to light from me near the nair, so too over here, you'll be allowed to light me near the nair by Nerot Chanukah. On the other hand, if you think Nerot Chanukah are totally different than Mikdash, Mikdash, the mitzvah is a Loko. By Nerot Chanukah, it's the placement of the Chanukiah that makes the mitzvah. If that's the case, it's different than what happened in the Mikdash. We can't learn from the Mikdash that just because there were Madlik me near the nair in the Mikdash, would mean that you're also allowed to do that by the Chanukiah. Rashi says the distinction being, im adlako se mitzvah, then when you take the flame from one to the next, you're doing the mitzvah. You're actually activating the mitzvah at that time. Im anocho se mitzvah, if the placement of the Chanukiah is what does the mitzvah, then when you're lighting it, you're really not accomplishing a full mitzvah. I mean, of course you have to light the Chanukiah in order to do the mitzvah, but that's not the accomplishment of the mitzvah. The accomplishment of the mitzvah is only when you move the Chanukiah to the proper placement. But then, according to that, you can't go minar the nair. That's the way Rashi describes it. Tosafot brings a similar type of an explanation over here. So the Gemara says, the Ibailu, we already had this question. Halacha osa mitzvah, halacha osa mitzvah. So if we're able to determine what the halacha is there, that would also tell us what the halacha is about madlikim minar the nair. Tashma, the Amar Rava, ya tafus nair Chanukah v'omeid. Person's holding onto a nair Chanukah and standing. Lo asa v'lo klum. He did nothing. Shma minoach, anocho se mitzvah. Over there, it looks like anocho se mitzvah because the fact that it's in your hand is problematic. He didn't place it in the location that it needs to be. Mar says, no, hatamare omer, the tzochohu denakidla. Enochanami, maybe anocho se mitzvah, but the problem is that you're holding the candle. It looks like you're holding the candle for your own benefit. There's no indication here that this is a candle of Chanukah. How do I know this is a candle of Chanukah when you're standing? You would need the light anyway. You'd walk around with the candle anyway. If you're holding a candle in your hand, there's nothing that indicates to us that that's near Chanukah. You have to do something that makes it clear that's near Chanukah. That's part of why, again, I said before, you put it outside the door. You put it down low, places where there's no necessity for light. That's a clear indication that those are near Chanukah. Tashma davarava idlika bifnim, your case. Right? Idlika bifnim v'otziya lo asa klum. He lights it inside, carries it out, he didn't do anything. If you say that halakha is the mitzvah, halakha bimkomo beinon, you need to do the halakha in the proper location, where it is already doing the mitzvah. That's why when you carry it out, you've done nothing. Halakha is the mitzvah. If you light it inside, take it out and put it down, it should be just fine. Why is the Rebbe saying it's problematic? Rebbe says again, again, there's no clear indication that you lit it for Neirot Chanukah. You lit it inside, the person thinks that you lit it for your own purposes. Now you carry it outside and put it down? What does it have to do with Chanukah? You have to make something clear that it's for Chanukah and not for your own utilization. So Tashma, so here we come to the definitive proofs, which is, Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Ashashit, Shaitalo Doleket, Valechet, Olayom Kulo. You have a glass, as Rashi says, lanterna, glass lantern, Shaitat Doleket, Valechet, Olayom Kulo. All through the Shabbat, this lantern is burning. Lemotze Shabbat, you can come, mechaber, you blow it out, umadlika l'shem nerot Chanukah, blow it out and just light it again, and that can be for Chanukah lech. Iyamar bishlam adlakos mitzvah shapir. If adlakos mitzvah, then it makes sense. Ela iyamar hanochos mitzvah. If you say placement of mitzvah, hi mechaber umadlika, wouldn't be sufficient to extinguish it and then relight it. Mechaber umagbia umenicha umadlika mibayle. You would have to extinguish it, lift it up, place it down, and then light it in order to be Chanukah. Because otherwise, it's sitting there through a whole Shabbat. It looks like it's Neirot Shabbat. In order to change its designation to Neirot Chanukah, you'd have to lift it up, place it down specifically for the intent of lighting it for Neirot Chanukah. The fact that it's missing that stage is an indication that Hadlokos a mitzvah. And the next one is Va'od. What's the bracha we make on lighting Neirot Chanukah? Asher Kiddishanu Be'mitzvotav. We focus on the hadlokah. If you're making the bracha on the hadlokah, it sounds like the hadlokah is the mitzvah. So here you see the bracha, and here is the nusach bracha for hadlokah nerot chanukah. Shmamina, hadlokah ose mitzvah, shmamina. It's clear from here that hadlokah is ose mitzvah. Answering the question of hadlokah anocha also answers the question of whether miner l'ner. And that's what Tosafot points out over here. If we pass on hadlokah ose mitzvah, based on the Gemara's conclusion, that means that you're also allowed to be madlikim miner l'ner. Have you ever seen anybody light miner l'ner by Neirot Chanukah? Tosafot brings that right away. Vimkein mutar ladlik miner l'ner, mikol makom. Kevin shenagu olam machmir, ein lishanot et haminag. Says people are machmir anyway. Despite the fact that it's mutar, people have a minag not to do this. And therefore, don't be shown at the minag. But technically, you can light miner l'ner by Neirot Chanukah, which is very interesting. I will raise one issue with that, which is, what's the miner l'ner here? Because it could be, and this is important to know, which is that if you're talking about multiple people lighting one candle, ner yishu beito, doing the mitzvah, so that could be you're lighting from candle to candle. When you're talking about mahadrin or mahadrin min a mahadrin, it's clear that you accomplish the mitzvah by lighting the first candle. When you subsequently light the additional candles, maybe it doesn't apply to Mahajan, Mahajan, and Mahajan. Because once you've lit the first candle, you've accomplished Neir Yishu Beito, you've accomplished the mitzvah. Everything you do after that is a Zeh Keli Vanveyu, is Hidur Mitzvah. So if that's the case, then lighting from the first candle to the other candles may not be the same as lighting from one candle to another when it's Neir Yishu Beito in both places. There are those, and it's really a machloket in the Achronim, Chaim speaks about this, about how does Hidur Mitzvah relate to the original mitzvah. Does Hidur Mitzvah still have aspects of the original mitzvah inside of it, or is the Hidur Mitzvah exactly that? It's Hidur Mitzvah, but it does not have aspects of the mitzvah. It's not part and parcel of the mitzvah. How tied in to the original mitzvah is it? Do we look at it as a holistic mitzvah? So Mahajim, you do Mahajim, 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 then that's one mitzvah. That's it. Or do we say, no, the mitzvah is accomplished, and everything else is either mitzvah, it's a separate entity. As nafkamina lalacha, one of them is this idea of miner l'ner. If you think it's not one big mitzvah, one holistic mitzvah, then it may be problematic to light from the first to the others. On the other hand, if you think it's one mitzvah, then maybe you could light from one to the others. As nafkamina in terms of brocha. If you forgot to make the brocha, you lit the first candle. Can you make the brocha on the residual candles that you're going to light? Is that part of the mitzvah or not? Is that only hidur mitzvah? You can't make a brocha. Now, the question comes up here, comes up in Lulav and other places, about how integral is hidur mitzvah to the mitzvah itself, and it will have nafkamina l'alacha. Our practice is interesting. We light the first candle, And then while we're lighting the subsequent candles, we sing Anerot Halalu. So we do a little bit of both. We don't speak. In general, we only speak on the topic of Nerot Chanukah, but we do speak. We do start saying Anerot Halalu once we've lit the first candle. So there is some indication that we're giving a special status to the first candle, because the bracha is chal on that. We don't say Nerot Halalu until after we've lit that. Can't, obviously, it only makes sense to do it after you've lit. Ma'izin et hefsek for the remaining candles. So the fact is that we do it after the first candle, before the other candles. It's not a hefsek because it's minyona of the lighting of the candles. So technically there it's not a hefsek. Generally we try to avoid doing things like this. We don't try not to interrupt between the bracha and the masa mitzvah. Assuming that, it's interesting that we treat the latter candles different than the first candle and saying a Neirat Halalu. Now, I'm going to read the remaining Gemara and then we'll come back and discuss it a little bit more tomorrow because it's a big topic. Just finish up the two dots and then I'll try to bring you more tomorrow about this, which is V'hashad Amrina Lokos Mitzvah. If we conclude that a Lokos Mitzvah Hidlika Herishote V'kadan Lo'asav Lo'klum, then if it's lit by someone who does not have the status of a gadol or doesn't have the capacity to do mitzvot, then a cheresh, someone again who is both unable to speak, unable to hear, in their day who is classified as a shote, the status today may be very different. Shote, someone who is not of sound mind, and a katan, someone who is a minor, lo asav lo klum, he can't accomplish the mitzvah because of lakos mitzvah. On the other hand, isha vaday madlika, on the other hand, a woman may definitely light. Women are chayavot in Ner Chanukah, she'af hein hayu b'oto anes, because they're also included in the miracle. Af hein hayu b'oto anes is usually, Tosafot says this in other places, is usually utilized in issues mi derabanan, not in issues mi d'oraita, even though there are some rishonim want to apply it even to things d'oraita. Only mitzvot derabanan is brought up in three mitzvot derabanan, three mitzvot derabanan that also have pirsumei nisa attached to them. That is, Kriyat HaMegillah, Arba Kosot, on the night of Pesach. And here, by Nerot Chanukah, the Chachamim say, Af Hein Hayu B'oto Anes. It's machlok between the Rashbam and Tosafot in Psachim, what that means. Rashi over here brings both interpretations. Af Hein Hayu Anes, does that mean that they were also in danger? They were in the same danger as the man, and therefore, the release from that danger by Hashem applied equally to them? Or does Af Hein Hayu B'oto Anes mean that they were primary figures in the Geula by Purim? Esther is a central figure. Over here, Rashi quotes with regards to the Yevanim that Ayidei Isha Nasenes, daughter of Yochanan, Yehudit, daughter of Yochanan, that was one who killed the general of the Greco-Syrian army, which turned the tide of the battle. So there's a woman involved. And Mitzrayim, you know, B'schut, Nashim Tzidkariot, that we left Mitzrayim. So that's a question. When Avayinu B'yoto Nes, is that they were in equal danger, or does that mean that they were primary figures in the Geula? Then also, Sh'Avayinu B'yoto Nes, so that's a question here. What is Avayinu B'yoto Nes? Rashi brings both interpretations here, but again, in Psachim, it's the Rashbam and Tosavot argue about what the meaning of Avayinu B'yoto Nes is. And then, again, what does that mean for the status of women? Are women then on equal footing with men with regards to these mitzvot? And that means that they could be motzi a man. That means that a woman could light on behalf of her husband, husband could light on behalf of his wife. These questions arise within Nerot Chanukah and within Kriyat Megillah.